Welcome back to Minute Impossible. It's Wednesday. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the movie Mission Impossible, 1 minute at a time. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
Hey, everybody. This is Brad from the Cosmic Geppetto Podcast.
God, Brad. Come on, man. Stop it.
Just really plugging it every chance I get.
Welcome back, Brad.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks so much for continuing to have me on this week. This is a lot of fun, and this is a great conversation. It's so much fun talking to you guys, and it's fun to talk about this movie. This is such a crazy movie in so many ways, and it's such a weird minute. And these are 5 minutes I don't think you would see in an action, in a summer action movie in 2017 or 2018.
No, it's crazy.
No, these scenes definitely won't show up in the Mission Impossible 6 movie.
No.
Oh, no.
I think the closest that I've seen to this is probably the card game in Casino Royale. And that was like 7 years ago, 10 years ago now.
Yeah, God, it was. Well, this minute begins with Ethan shaking his head and ends with Kittredge throwing Tood.
Throwing Tood.
He's definitely throwing Tood in this minute. The men in the white lab coats are closing in on Max's office. You can kind of see the lab coats better. Two of them have on rubber white jackets, like overcoats, the ones you were talking about before, Brad. They're like rain slickers. They're like white rain slickers. And then two other ones are just wearing like lab coats. I think we had some issues with the costuming this scene. Unless they're like the wet work, like they're dressed in rubber suits because they're literally ready to get covered in blood.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
But why would you then have anybody else in white? Why white? Why not black? Why not red?
It just seems like De Palma made a decision. He's like, I want them to sort of wear white to look cool in the against the background, make it work somehow. And they're like, they don't really make white trench coats. Well, just make them lab coats, but not quite. And they're really slick. And he's like, sure, that looks great. And it doesn't look great, or it no longer looks great. Everything, all the trench coats, all the hats, so much of the costuming looks so dated and bulky. And I was like, wow, did everything look so big and bulky back then? And I was like, yes, it did.
Everything was shoulder pads.
Yep.
Also, we'd appreciate if when you do a Brian De Palma impression, you do it correctly and use his correct Italian accent. We're a big fan of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen.
That's okay. Actually, that's just fine. Our listeners will thank you for that.
Yeah, he was around for the last couple of weeks a little too much, right?
And then McGruff the Crime Dog walks up and we see it's Kittredge. It is Kittredge. He's wearing a blue fedora, like a dark blue fedora, and his trench coat.
He walked off the set of The Untouchables, apparently.
Was he in the van? I didn't see him get out of the van.
He was in one of the other vans. There were two different vans that showed up, and he was in the first one.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. Hey, guys, this is our first confirmation that some of the B-team survived Ethan trying to drown them at the restaurant the night before. This is our first confirmation. We get to see the B-team. Brad, just so you know, the B-team was the other Impossible Mission Force team that was at the embassy earlier and was trailing our heroes through the movie. And then when he uses the gum on the giant aquarium, he blows up most of the B-team, and we didn't know if they lived or died.
I'm glad they give you that confirmation that he survived it, because he really shouldn't, because they're not doing anything wrong. They're just doing their job. They really shouldn't be blown up or drowned or anything bad.
Yeah, he shouldn't be a murderer. He should not be a murderer of his own people.
No.
Yeah, yeah. And that's always the fun thing with these movies where you have the big shootout and between the good guy and the other good guys are hunting that good guy. And it's like, all right, just try not to hurt him too bad. And you can tell this with Daring movie, where I'm thinking of the John Woo movie Face Off, where the whole tension was there was the good guy who's pretending to be the bad guy who accidentally is like beating up and watching his other good guys who are chasing him get killed, and you know that creates a neat dynamic. But that shouldn't be Mission Impossible, and it certainly shouldn't be Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
Ah, but wait until the second movie.
Yeah, Brad, I was about to say, have you seen the second movie? Yeah. You just described the exact plot. Guy looks like another, because they're gentleman spies in the second movie. He and his counterpart, like, have each other in their kill sites at least twice and don't kill each other.
Yeah. Well, it's a John Woo. His Face Off was a John Woo film. Mission Impossible 2, John Woo. John Woo loves that stuff.
Yeah.
I think he thinks it plays well. It doesn't. Spoiler from my feelings of the second movie. So it's It's gonna be rough. Brad, we'll have you on for it.
That's why I haven't seen a John Woo movie in a long time.
Not since Mission Impossible 2. It burned me out on him.
Yeah.
Did you not see Paycheck?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess I did see Paycheck. Wait, is that the movie? No.
That's the Ben Affleck one?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of that lottery ticket movie where Nicolas Cage wins the lottery.
Oh, no.
He's a cop.
Yeah, that's it could happen to you. Is that Paycheck? What is it? It is Paycheck, isn't it?
Yeah, it is Paycheck.
Yeah, it is Paycheck. With Ben Affleck and Uma Thurman.
Yeah. And he did, Wu did that. And he also did Wind Talkers. And then
Wind Talkers. God.
Then I love me some John Woo, but man, I could not sit through that movie.
That movie is rough. All right. Anyway, we see the B team members. I've named them. I call her Dinner Lady. She was just the lady at dinner. And I also have the skinny guy who I've named Bill Nye, the CIA guy.
Who got blown through the windows.
These two guys are definitely from the B team. They come in the house. Bill Nye, the CIA guy, checks the bathroom. And Dinner Lady takes the maid and walks her away. You know what? I've seen this movie a million times. Never remembered that there's a cleaning lady and she looks completely frazzled. And that they have to actually get someone from the IMF to like walk her out, like, all right, come on, go. It's a cute little scene that like shows they're not just, you know, murderers.
What I never noticed until the blessing and the curse of doing minute by minute is you really catch a lot of cool little stuff, but it can also make you learn to hate the movie if it's like because
we've had weeks like that, Brad.
Yeah.
We've had weeks where it's just been, we're like, we're trying to say something nice, and we're like, I can't. Yeah. Just got to keep goofing on it. Got to keep goofing.
I just got to kick out of the vacuum cleaning lady.
Is she still vacuuming the whole time?
Guns pulled. It's like, my shift's going to be over soon, so I'm going to finish this up.
But I guess they don't want her to give away that she just immediately stops vacuuming. They want it to seem like she's still out there vacuuming, I guess. That's my guess.
If a team of white-robed people walked past you with giant guns with silencers on them at your job, would you just stand up straight and walk out?
Yep.
Wouldn't you just automatically just turn around and just be like, well, I'm not going to be here anymore?
I'd see those white coats coming before they even pulled the guns. I'd be like, see ya. I'm gone. They're rubber coats. They're shiny. No, I'm not going anywhere near them.
That brings up a good point. There is very little collateral damage in this movie.
Yeah.
Later on, we do have some, but I don't think anybody gets shot who shouldn't in this movie.
No, no.
Can you think
of
anyone?
No.
No.
Maybe at the end, when we get to the end, there might be some with some explosions on a train. Someone definitely probably got hurt from that, but they don't show anything. It's not like Man of Steel. Buildings aren't being knocked down and car chases aren't hitting people and cars aren't exploding. So,
well, even one of the later Mission Impossible movies where they blow up the Kremlin.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
And it's not even like...
Everybody's fine, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they all... Oh, yeah. They all just brushed off the dirt and got the Kremlin dust off of them. But... And that wasn't even like the big ending of that movie. That was sort of just things that set some stuff in motion. It's, they're blowing up the Kremlin to get Ethan to like think things might be serious.
Yeah, the bad guy in this movie, the worst thing he does is kill spies. It's their job to die and live for their country. So is that collateral damage? No, that's part of, it could have easily has been part of the mission.
But today's work.
Yeah, well, they're Mission Impossible spies. It's sort of in the title. You're not really expected to come back alive, no matter how long they can go without killing John Voight.
We expected Emilio Estevez, star of the movie, to continue.
You know what? I think this was just a thing where Emilio owed that to Tom Cruise for Tom Cruise dying so quick in Young Guns.
Young Guns, exactly.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, we've talked about that. He definitely did a one-for-one on that. And we're very happy he did. He's still one of our favorite characters in this movie. At second 43, we meet Kittredge's right-hand man. He's Harry Barnes. His name's Barnes in the movie, but his name in the book is Harry Barnes. So now we know his first name. Played by famous character actor and military advisor Dale Dye Jr. I know you guys have seen him before. He usually has a mustache. But he owns a company called Warriors, Inc., and they are technical advisors for military movies and TV shows.
He's awesome.
That is great work if he can get it.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys that joined the Marines because he flunked the test to go to the military academies like three times. So he just joined the Marines. While he was in the Marines, he was one of the first people sent over to Vietnam in 1965. he and his Marine battalion were sent over, they liked him so much, they made him into a correspondent. So he was doing a lot of, he was a Marine, trained as a Marine, but also a correspondent for the Marines. The most amazing thing is that he replaced an assistant machine gunner. I'm going to read this a little bit. In 1968, he replaced an assistant machine gunner who had been killed. The machine gun position was isolated. This was during the Tet Offensive at the end of the war. Although he was wounded, he stayed at the position and exposed himself to intense enemy fire to retrieve ammunition for the machine gun to hold off Viet Cong soldiers during an all-night firefight.
Wow.
He was wounded, but he also helped rescue several wounded Marines around him. He was awarded the Bronze Star and the Combat V for heroism. He's kind of a badass.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I remember seeing him the first time was around Platoon, I believe, because Oliver Stone used him like exclusively for his stuff for the longest time. So that's remember.
And you can see him in a lot of movies. Outbreak. He's even in Outbreak. Yep. He's the general who's the bad guy from Outbreak?
The monkey.
No, does yes, the monkey is the bad guy, but also the general. It's March of the Penguins guy.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman hates his character in the movie. Like he considers him a lesser general. He pops up everywhere. Anytime they do a military, a lot of times it's military training and military bases. He's always the coordinator and military advisor on these because he did this stuff. Yep. It's amazing. And he's got a whole team that he works with.
Well, what strikes me about Dai is I'm looking at his wiki page. He's 73 years old, but he strikes me as one of those 73-year-old former military guys that could go into any bar and kick any 25-year-old workout guy's ass.
Oh, yeah.
He could probably stick his thumb in my neck and just I'd fall over.
And it's the old guy that usually young guys tend to antagonize because they look like they're a little bit of like stiff upper, you know, like they got a stick inserted somewhere. And they're the guys who always end up beating up the younger guys. I always liked those guys. My dad's one of those guys. My dad's a former, you know, served in the military during Vietnam, and his brothers served in the military, and they're all those sort of old country strong, tough as nails. They're always sort of barrel chested. They have like skinny arms, skinny legs, and like just a big torso because that's how they live. And they're guys you don't want to mess with because you're pretty sure they killed someone in Vietnam. And you're pretty sure that they know how to put you through the nearest wall given the first opportunity, and they don't care. And that's just what that guy looks like. And a little less in, not so much in Mission Impossible in this minute, because he's obviously a no-nonsense guy, but he sort of gets talked down to by Kittredge, which is, you sort of want to see him just punch Kittredge, because Kittredge has a punchable face to begin with.
Sure, and the character that he's playing is so condescending in this movie. That yeah, this has the scene that a lot of people, other than Ethan saying, "You haven't seen me angry." This is another one of those lines that you remember. You don't remember why you remember it, but Kittredge saying to Barnes, "This guy's a ghost. What should we do, Barnes? Put a guy at the airport?" And he does it in such a condescending way, but you remember the way that Michael Cerny inflected that to this day. And I love that because obviously Dale Dye is a good sport. And they did this because they know Dale Dye would kill him.
Right, right.
And so it's funnier to have the little smarmy CIA pencil pusher talk to the badass
right.
like this.
Cerny's so good at that. And this isn't too long. I think this was after the Jack Ryan movie he did with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, this was 2 years later.
Yeah. And it seemed like he had, and he had, like I said, he's had a nice career, but I don't remember him being the main bad guy in a lot of movies. And it felt like he could have been an Alan Rickman type where you have a 3-4 movie streak where he's the bad guy that you get to see Bruce Willis kill, and then you see Steven Seagal kill, and, you know, just goes, makes the rounds of the bad guy that everyone eventually throws into helicopter rotor blades. Because you see him and you're just like, I'm looking forward to him getting punched really hard by Jean-Claude Van Damme.
We're at that point in the movie where we don't like him, we like our star.
Right. But you pointed it out yesterday, he's still actually technically a good guy in this movie.
Yeah.
He is. He's the good guy. He's the one at the on the right. If he caught Ethan right now, Ethan would go to jail and Kittredge would get a promotion.
Yep.
Right.
And that's not happening. In the movie right now, we want Ethan to smugly get around him at every page. This is also one of those vagaries that gets cleared up from the book and also from the movie, is when Kittredge says that this guy, yeah, when he says his airport line, what can we do, Barnes, put a guy at the airport? In the book, it keeps going, and I'm glad they cut this line down to what shows up in the movie. I'm going to read this to you. It's pretty terrible. What do we do, Barnes? Put a guy at the airport? Sure. How many identities do you think Hunt has? How many times do you think he slipped past customs? These guys were trained to be ghosts. We taught them to do it, for Christ's sakes. And then Jim Phelps perfected it. Hell, Phelps taught us things about disappearing we hadn't even thought of. What? That's a line. Jim Phelps taught us things about disappearing we hadn't thought of.
Well, it's good that they cut that. First off, you don't even want to be thinking about Phelps at this point.
No, there's no reason. I mean, this book brings up Jim Phelps. It's a love letter to Jim Phelps. They love him. Usually it's much smuttier than this. It's a lot of mouths and wetness. It's weird.
That is weird.
That is weird.
If they mention him so often in the movie, when you finally have to reveal that Phelps is still around, it would completely deflate the surprise of that.
What?
Spoiler alert! If you were to see him again.
Oh, sure, if. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, yeah.
Shh! Don't let Jonathan know.
Don't let me know what?
Nothing. Easter Bunny's all right. Easter Bunny's fine.
Well, Kittredge is a jerk. Only one person that we've had on so far likes him. That's David Palis. He was our guest a couple of weeks ago. He only wanted Kittredge minutes. And we were like, you don't have Kittredge minutes. He's like, man, I want Kittredge. We're like, why? He's a jerk the whole time. So,
yeah. Some people love a jerk.
This one's a hard one for Tech of the App. Let's see if we can figure out some Tech of the App for this one. All right, I'll go first. Tech of the app for this one. We get a close-up shot again of the RF scanner, but I think I'm going to go with Bill Nye, the CIA guy's sweet suppressor on his gun. It's a long shot. It's at second 22 of this minute. He's taken a high position, and he is waiting to... He's waiting while Dale Dye opens the door, while Barnes opens the door and is covering him. I don't quite understand how it works, because in 2 seconds later, he's downstairs already looking in the bathroom.
No, because the guy at the top is the bearded guy from the lake or the river.
Mm, is it?
Yes, he is. That's why he
Are
goes.
Sure?
Yeah, oh yeah, because he leaves.
I thought that was the guy that's sitting down next to Dale.
No, that's the Bill Nye
that's
guy.
On his knees.
No, that's Bill Nye.
So you're saying it's Beardy Mc... well, I have a name for him.
Yeah, Beardy.
His name is Underwater Waitstaff. He's the guy who gets hit with the deluge of water from the aquarium. So you're saying that guy up at the top in the bird's nest right now is him?
Yeah, he's the guy that was on the river with the lady, you know, okay. Mugging out.
Yeah, he's the one who's the waiter in the restaurant.
Yeah, one of the... Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, then I was wrong, okay? I was wrong.
Well, I think when it comes to the tech, all you really have is that suppressor and possibly the mop. Those are the closest things you have to technological advances. I think that was a good mop. I think it's one that had the good squeezy thing on it. So that's all I'm coming up with.
I think that's a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, I'm going with the lady with the vacuum cleaner.
That's a vacuum cleaner.
Oh,
not a mop.
You're right. It was a mop. Well, you know what? Then I think that was a good vacuum cleaner. I think that was might have had the two turbine system. So that's all I'm coming up with.
Yeah, she's going to be my tech of the app, too, because she's, consistent with her job. She's not going anywhere.
Wait, not the vacuum cleaner, the actual vacuum cleaner?
The vacuum cleaner,
the lady?
Yeah. They're one unit. They're one unit.
Oh, my God. She's like RoboCop. She's half human, half...
Half vacuum. She's RoboMaid.
Cool.
They were testing them out in Prague during the 90s, you know. They're everywhere now, though.
This is going to be the weirdest fan fiction ever.
So, yeah, I think it's pretty quick. This is a pretty quick tech of the app on this one. It's the gun, which is the first suppressor we've seen in the movie. First gun pointed at anything.
Yeah.
Because I'm going back right now to think of any other guns. They don't pull any guns at the aquarium. So
Ethan does. Ethan did pull a gun on Claire.
He did pull a gun, but it's the first gun with a suppressor.
Oh yes, yes, you're right.
I'm splitting hairs right now.
Yes.
Well, that's what makes this movie so amazing. It's an action movie where there's not a lot of gunplay, and Tom Cruise doesn't throw a punch. He kicked one guy, and that's about it. And then, of course, what makes it even crazier when they go to Mission Impossible 2, just get way ahead of it. And that's that was like the first time that Tom Cruise was really in an action movie where there was so much like punching and being like a fighter, because in this movie he was an adventurer, not a fighter.
They changed his character, and he still fights, but they have lessened it.
Yeah.
In 5 and 6, he does. I mean, yes. In 4, he does punch the guy when they're in the in that car thing at the end for the final battle. He and the evil scientist are punching each other, but he's punching a scientist, so it's not like a really cool battle.
No, the real fight in there was him getting to the bomb and deactivating it in time. Not him coming up with someone who was like a physical equal.
And I think they've done that. They've done that a lot in these movies, and I like it better when they're not. It's not matched. They did it again in 4. They did it again because they had like the female character square off and then kick someone out the window. And we'll get to that years from now and explain that. But yeah, I don't like that trope. I don't like everybody pairing off and fighting the person who is their physical equal. I like these type of moments better, where he just uses his brain and they're using their cool plan and their cool gadgets to get the stuff done.
Right.
That's a good place to stop, as any. We'll come back tomorrow for a minute 49. We're almost through this week. Hump day is complete. We can move on to minute 49. Brad's be back. I've chained him to Chris, so he and Chris are now chained to me. So we've now got a triplet ready to go to sleep tonight, wake up tomorrow early in the morning, and go over minute 49 with you guys.
You're going to make me be the little spoon, aren't you?
Mm. No, you're the middle spoon. Sorry, dude. Our guest is always the middle spoon because we want you to feel loved.
Just be aware of the marauding Brian De Palma in the middle of the night, though.
Brian De Palma shows up every once in a while. He hasn't showed up this week yet.
No,
so
thank
hopefully,
God.
Maybe he's out to dinner. I don't know. I don't keep up with his schedule, but you can always keep up with our schedule. Ha! Segue in at the Impossible Minute Force, which is our Facebook group. You can talk to us on there. Chris is there. I'm there. Brad might show up. Who knows? And you can also talk to us at Min Impossible on Twitter, MIN Impossible, and on Instagram at Minute Impossible. You can also go to our website, which I never promote, and check out our podcast. It is MinuteImpossible.com. Not that hard. All of our episodes are up there, and you can catch us on any podcatcher you've got. Until tomorrow, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
I've been Brad. This podcast will self-destruct in 3, 2, 1, boom!
Well, that's what we get for letting him go off book on this one.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for that. Give me a script.
You don't need a script. Just do it. Off the cuff. Perfect.